Hey, welcome in. It's the All Ball Podcast. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and I'm going to do a little something special today, okay? Tomorrow, Japan time, the quarterfinals begin in the Olympics. And who better, and you can't get this anywhere else, who better to break down what's going on, what we're going to see, what you should look for, kind of the interesting stories about USA basketball and the matchup tonight with Spain, then a guy who's actually coached and beaten Spain, okay, and a guy who's coached in for a national team, and he's American, he's coached stateside, he understands the differences in the basketball. Mike Taylor's joined us before. He's the head coach of the Polish national team. He's joined us before, and we've talked about his journey, but now we're gonna cheat, basically. We're gonna steal his brain and help you get ready if you want to go to Bet Rivers and throw some cash down, or you're just really interested because, and Mike, thanks for joining us. You know, this pod has really exploded, and I got to thank the folks at iHeart and Colin Cowherd and the senseless, needless promotion, whatever, but it hasn't been senseless and needless. We get over 300,000 downloads per episode. And I have so many coaches who tell me like, hey, when I'm on the road recruiting or now guys are off, that they just listen and they love people's stories about their journey. But I think this is an even better listen because you have a brilliant basketball mind and you have a real grasp for these teams. Okay. So first, what is your thought on the makeup of USA, of this actual roster?
Well, first of all, Doug, I'm really happy to be here. I love All Ball, big fan. You know, and it's wonderful to talk about FIBA basketball, something I love. And I think that Team USA, obviously the headline grabbing win for France to start off the tournament, set the tone for everything. And I think what you have to look at is I feel like Team USA is a team that's built maybe not necessarily for the FIBA game. I think that people are looking at a lot of different reasons. But for me, number one, I feel like the team is missing a playmaking, distributing point guard, a guy that's going to connect all the scores, move the ball. And the second thing is, I think that, you know, it's just a team that is, you saw France played physical, played big against us and out-rebounded us. I think it was 42-36 or something in the first game where France won. You know, the international teams are not just stretch fours, you know, like they've got skilled, physical players. And I feel like the Team USA is missing some of the blue collar guys, some of the guys that are bringing that physicality because they
have that. Honestly, Mike, the power forward is kind of position that nobody has anymore. It's like right. LeBron James has the size and makeup of what used to be a Karl Malone, right? They're like basically the difference is like he's a point power forward now, right? And so instead you have the Draymond Greens, who's, you know, basically like an undersized power forward, but he is undersized. And now and the other part is, and I'd have to go back and look at this year, but I remember last year, the year before in the playoffs, zero starting centers in an NBA playoff team was American born, not one. Right.
What does that tell you? Right.
Well, I mean, like, look, there's a little bit. Carl Anthony Towns played for the Dominican Republic, but, you know, he's not a traditional center, but he clearly could do the job. But yeah, I mean, why do you think like I'm fascinated by this and I want to get to the differences of FIBA basketball and why you're able like Rudy Gobert was a liability in the NBA playoffs. He's a strength in the Olympics. But let's just start with like, let's hypothesize out here. Why do you think that we have everything, but we suddenly don't have centers that can play in the NBA?
Well, I think the NBA game is different than the FIBA game. I think you've got a lot of rim runners, rim protectors, guys that are going to sit in a dunker spot in the NBA. You know, guys that are trying to just finish pick and rolls and things like this. And then, you know, the international teams roll out a guy like, you know, Marc Gasol, who is rebounding and he's got, you know, like four assists a game and they're playing through these guys on the perimeter, dribble handoffs, you know, backdoor cuts, things like this, where they can get some great ball movement and play through the post. So I think that the skill factor, the ability to pass the ball, I think you see is a lot more prevalent in Europe. And I think teams are setting their teams up to play through these guys. You know, the NBA game, you're really playing through your stars. And I think there's limited opportunities for other players to make plays. I think that, for example, with Slovenia, one of the great things that these guys have done is hit, for example, Mike Toby on this short roll all the time. And I think you see a lot of pocket passing short roll guys that can make that mid-roll decision and move the ball, you know, find shooters on the perimeter. And I think this is something that these European teams, through the pick and roll game and with their big men, you know, it's an added dimension you don't ordinarily see with fives, you know, the rim runners, the rim protectors, this typical type player in the NBA.
Do you think it's because we basically, why is it that it's not like we don't have big guys. We have some big guys, but is it our training? Are we training them for an NBA style? And the Mike Toby's an interesting one. He's American, right? Yeah. But he got a Slovenian passport, so he gets to play for them. And it's not like he would have made our national team. But I'm interested in that. Why we don't have any that I'm trying to think of. Like, we had the Plumleys were like the only ones we could, but they can't really score in there.
When you think about, you go into your gyms in LA and you're coaching your travel ball teams and things like this, you know, and you watch high school kids work out, and a lot of times, even the five men, even the bigs that are on the floor are trying to play like guards. They're all trying to step out on the perimeter. There's very few guys trying to play back to the basket, low post. And even in the NBA, people will say, argue analytics, hey, there's the post up is a low percentage shot, low percentage offense. But I think even if you don't want that to be a primary part of your offense, you need to establish the post because, you know, you can flatten out the defense, number one, you pressure the rim, and then you can play post reaction and get your team good shots. So I think that teams that are just trying to play pick and roll and prepare their players to play that way, you know, you become a one-dimensional team. And I think the thing about FIBA basketball that I love is teams from all over the world play with different styles. And I think that in America right now, we've got too much of the NBA mentality. For example, a pick and roll is for me to score. A pick and roll is 2-on-2. But overseas in Europe, in the FIBA game, it's a 5-on-5 game. And the thing about, like, Doncic, for example, is he can run the same play four plays in a row. And I've seen him do it in Kaunas playing against Venezuela. They ran a simple, you know, slot pick and roll. You know, he hit Toby for a bucket. He finished at the rim. He made the diagonal pass at a corner for a three, and he passed it out to the wing for a three. Same play, just reading the game, making it 5-on-5. And I think this is where, you know, people talking down about post-ups and post-up opportunities. And then secondly, you know, the way players are trained to play the post in the USA, you know, everybody wants to try to play like a guard. And there's different aspects to the post game that you can really get good at, that I just think that we're not coaching our young kids up to do.
You're right. Okay. There's a friend of mine that I grew up, he was my age, only a year ahead of me, named Jelani Gardner. I don't know if you remember Jelani.
Yeah. From Cal, right?
Right. Cal, then Pepperdine. Right. Yep. His son is going to be, it looks like he's going to be a star, 7-foot sophomore, but he's a face up big, right? Because if you want to make it in the States, you got to be a face up big. So I think some of that is the coaching and the training. He can score down low as well. Some of that is coaching. I mean, everybody wants to be Kevin Garnett, right? Some of that, I think a good portion of it, honestly, is the way in which the American game is officiated. Like, people say, if you want to bring back post play, you can't have it be World War III down there, basically fist fighting down there. And then when you get on the perimeter, the second you touch a guy, it's a foul. Like, well, of course you get out on the perimeter, right? It's just, I think officiating, I think coaching, I think all of these things, obviously the use of analytics, and it makes, okay. So for people who haven't coached as extensively as you have, there's no illegal defense, right? So Rudy Gobert doesn't have to get in the lane, get out of the lane. Right? There's no illegal defense. What I know of FIBA style officiating, one, it's terrible. and the other part, and this is interesting, is like, in our game, and I think we end up doing our best players a disservice. The best players are protected. Yeah. Whereas I don't know if the best players are targeted. It may feel that way to them. I think it feels that way to them because they're so used to being protected in the States. There's also, you know, the 5,000 instead of six, it's a shorter game. There's a lot of different aspects to it. But I think the first thing is that they're protected. The second thing is the game is, there's no 3 seconds. The third thing is what's called a foul. So here's what I, and again, you coach it. I've coached it, but you're talking about 4 years ago, I was in Israel, right? It's not, and I played in it almost 20 years ago and I've watched it extensively. So here's my thoughts. It is physical in the post, but the second you get the ball, if you're going up to shoot, they protect the shooter. What coaches always say, protect the shooter. They actually do in FIBA basketball. If you go up and somebody swipes the ball from you, it's almost always a foul. I would say 95% of the time it's a foul. They allow you to kind of ride a guy defensively when he doesn't have the ball, just kind of ride him foul. When you're dribbling the ball up the court, they allow you to kind of hand check and ride a guy so that it takes away from our athleticism. There's a reason that Luis Scola Pau Gasol can't play in the NBA anymore. Doesn't have the legs for it, but we can't make them pay because it's so much more physical. On the other hand, there are parts of the game which are called more tightly. It's just kind of the opposite of the American game. Like the American game, you can't touch a guy when he's dribbling, but when he goes up to shoot, if you block it or whatever, like it's basically, is it a foul or is it not a foul? It feels like those are the two biggest differences. What else am I missing considering how much you coach in the style of basketball?
No, Doug, I love your breakdown. I think it's very accurate. And the most important thing that you're pointing to is there is a difference and players have to adjust. And okay, the rules are one thing. You can put a second defender right at the rim when guys are posting up in FIBA. The illegal defense, that's a big factor. It changes the game. But again, this is a physical game. And I think it's not a surprise you see a guy like Jrue Holiday play so well because he's a physical player. And this is the point. USA, NBA, star mentality, star game. They're trying to protect the NBA superstars and help these guys. Okay, now they're going to try to make some changes on drawing fouls and things like this. But in FIBA, they will let you battle for position. They will let you fight for every inch on the floor. And this is, I think, what people appreciate about the FIBA game, teams and players playing both ends of the floor, playing a team game together. And I think this is what Team USA just can't, you know, they can't replicate or they can't duplicate in a short time. You've got teams that have been together for years playing.
Yeah, I call bullshit on that. We give our guys a pass. Okay. The French guys were playing in the States. Have they played together previously? Sure. Our guys have played together previously. It's how we play basketball is fucked up, right? let's just call it. We play. It's like I saw, and I'm not going to name names. I saw it be like, why don't they just do a Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant pick and roll? Like, what is that? What is that? That doesn't work. It's not like you said, the pick and roll is not just about two guys. It's about the whole thing kind of working together. Like how we're doing it is, and look, they play basketball. You guys play basketball like it's soccer, right? Where you're constantly picking and probing and moving. And it's all kind of this magical working together sort of thing. Whereas we just kind of do the brute force thing. Like, hey, this guy's better than that guy. Percentage of time that he's going to get. Give it to Kevin Durant and take him. And everybody else get the fuck out of the way, right? That's what we do. And this idea that all these guys play together like, yeah, the Australians all play at the Australian Institute of Sport, but that was here. Patty Mills hasn't been. They come back every couple of summers to play in an event. That's it, right? And it's not like they're running. It's just more about how they play basketball. Right. They move it. They trust each other, and the open guy gets
the ball. Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I will say this, though, Doug, the point about being together for a long period of time is not just on the floor. It's just like the structure of the team. You know, I think like you saw in France, USA has a 7-point lead and then everybody's like, they stopped, they changed the way they played. And okay, now it's Durant's time. Get him the ball. And KD, you go get buckets and win us the game. You know, and I think that there's a natural structure to a team where the team knows in pressure situations, we're going to work together to try to get this guy a shot within the offense. We're not going to change the way we're playing, but this guy is our guy. For example, Patty Mills with Australia, or everybody knows we're playing through Doncic with Slovenia. But I think when you have superstars who are in that, you know, primary lead role with all their teams in the NBA, because they're not used to being, you know, let's say the second guy, the third guy, the fourth guy.
Yeah, no doubt.
It kind of disjoints it a little bit. The more experience they would have together doing that, I think the better they would be.
It's a fair point. And remember the genetic wiring of all these guys. Now, Damian Lillard's a little different because he wasn't a superstar his whole life. But remember, he went to Weber State. The reason he went to Weber State was he got the ball. He got to play. So he's never, since he went to college, he's been the guy. Right. That was the whole thing, is he wanted to be point guard. He's a scoring point guard, and they played through him. So during he redshirted 1 year. So 4 years of college. And then ever since he's been in the NBA, he's played one way. Now you're like, hey, dude, we need you to kind of play a different way and move the ball and run a team. Like you can say, you can even want to do it, but it's just a really foreign feeling when you've done something for a decade one way. And for a month, we want you to do it a different way.
And this is the point with Team USA. It's not like an all-star game where you just plug these pieces together. The FIBA game, you've got to have guys that complement each other. You have to have multiple playmakers out there, but it can't just be multiple scorers. And now we've got so many scorers out here.
Yeah.
And again, it's not the Spurs system. It's not Coach Popovich. Stop making excuses about this stuff. This is all about the personnel. It's all about how the players fit together and how they complement each other. And one guy who wants to connect the dots and move the ball and set up his teammates and get all the scorers involved, that would make this team and this game so much easier. So for me, when I look at, you know, Team USA, I think it's flawed in the way it's built.
Yeah.
No distributing point guard, number one. You know, you need a guy to
again, which is something that we've, with the most part, Chris Paul's the exception, maybe Mike Conley. We've kind of, you know, again, those guys, where are they in the NBA, right? We don't have traditional centers and traditional point guards. And then in FIBA, now all of a sudden you need traditional centers and traditional point guards. And, you know, we don't have those guys, or the guys that we do have that are like that. TJ McConnell, their backup third string point guards, right?
But how can TJ McConnell help Team USA more than these other guys? How can that happen? Well, because the FIBA game is not about the five best players. Right. It's about the players that fit best together.
Right. But then here's the problem, which no one will admit, is it's not just is there politics to who gets selected? Of course there are, right? Of course. But there's also just the egos of, hey, you didn't invite Trae Young. You're going to invite TJ McConnell. Like, you know, like if that were to happen, you're never going to get Trae Young ever. He's going to say, F you. I'm never, you picked TJ McConnell instead of me. I mean, look, Kevin Love was washed up. He couldn't do it. Right. Or at least in practice, he wasn't in good enough shape, but I seem to be the only human being on TV and radio that totally understood the Kevin Love selection, because he is physical. He can shoot, can bang inside. And you don't have to be crazy athletic in order to play kind of a stretch five that can defend the post inside. Like, the idea of him made sense. But Jalen Rose doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, because he's never played.
Again, Doug, Kevin Love would have been a guy, if he's the Kevin Love that we envision from all the years where he's been a great player. He's a guy that, okay, here's Gobert. He's trying to protect the rim. Now you're picking and popping with the five. Now he's got to come out and guard on the perimeter, and it changes the game. But
right. And at the other end, he can defend Gobert, you know, with enough strength and push him away from the basket where he's not shooting lay-ins. And I think, again, another part of the flaw in the process is, yes, there's the exhibition games, but a lot of what they determine is based upon their own practices. Well, they're practicing against their own players.
Yeah.
Right. So it's really hard. It's like you have to see it against international competition in order to understand how it really fits. All right. But what's done is done. This is their team. Okay. So let's start with Spain. What are they've played Spain. They were all the teams in that little, in the bottom half of that bracket were in Vegas. What are the unique challenges to playing against Spain?
Well, Spain is at the end of their golden generation. They're super experienced. They're very well coached. Sergio Scariola does a fantastic job with the team. They're not going to back down from the NBA players. You know, you got Ricky Rubio and the Gasol brothers, Hernan Gomez. You got some really high-level players. But again, the guys that I love to watch on the team, Sergio Llull, the guard, fantastic, you know, scorer. Rubio is leading the team in scoring right now. So I don't know if that's a great thing for them. But again, the thing that Spain
is that an open for a reason, right?
And he's shooting like 44% from in the tournament. So he's doing well, you know, but he's such a great playmaker. You want the ball in his hands. But again, you got Rudy Fernandez who can really shoot the ball. Yuli can really shoot the ball. They've got some real great shooters on that team. For me, the thing that's been interesting about Spain is how much zone they've played. You know, I thought they had a great game plan against Doncic. They were physical. You know, they drew the charges on him, you know, as he penetrated deep. But again, you know, for me, the point for Spain is they can play through their post guys on the perimeter, got Marc Gasol in particular. And the experience of this team, they've been so close and they've played so many big games against Team USA. It's only a matter of time before they break through. And I think, okay, Team USA got beat by France when France played big. Spain can play big, you know, and here's the point, you know, now the pressure's on. Are they able to withstand that pressure? Will Team USA be individual when against that adversity like we expect them to be, because it's hard for them to be any other way? You know, Spain is a team that can play together and can really handle that pressure from their experience.
This is a hard question to answer. I have my own feelings about it. Do you think they respect our style of basketball? Like
not
the Spaniards?
No. And that's not just Spain. It's all throughout the world. I think, you know, it's easy for people to criticize the NBA and say, oh, the NBA, they don't play any defense or this, that, whatever. It's all one-on-one. You know, I think if you do that, you're disrespecting the athleticism and talent in the NBA, you know. But I think that the FIBA game is a different game. And again, what we appreciate about it is the team basketball, the teamwork, playing both ends of the floor, giving up your body and being physical, the physicality of it. And these are the things that, you know, you should respect or people should respect about it, whether USA or outside. But I think there's a little bit of let's say chip on the shoulder of teams like Spain that are trying to say, hey, USA has been great for all these years. You know, we're good too. We play our way. They play one-on-one. And we saw Evan Fournier's comment from France after they won. They're better than us individually, but they can be beaten, you know, by a team. I think it's not easy to face, but it's the reality
this is what people miss. Okay. So in the Olympic Games, well, we beat Spain, right? Was that 4 years ago? Was that 5 years ago? I'm trying to think. It was a close game, right? And maybe it was 2012, right? When Kobe kind of bailed him out, you know, you got KD and Kobe and LeBron, and what they were – what Mike Krzyzewski, I don't actually think they ran as good of stuff offensively when Coach K was there. I thought it was very, very rudimentary.
Yeah.
But they were just so – overwhelmingly athletic defensively, that they could pressure, they could take chances, that they could make up for mistakes, that they could kind of speed Spain up. And then they just had enough shot making to where you're like, Spain was actually probably a better team, but you know, you had just too much firepower. But it was a 4-point game with a couple minutes to go. It's a very, very close game. Now you take the overall speed, athleticism, talent factor down a notch, right? And I think it's a really, really hard game. If you were betting, if I sent you to Bet Rivers, okay, who do you think wins the game?
You know, I'm rooting for USA, but my money's on Spain. And the reason I say that is because USA, as you say, just is relying on talent. They're just relying on hitting shots. And the difference, okay, Iran, you know, certain people are getting excited over beating Iran, but that's like a scrimmage game for those guys. That's not a non-competitive win. You know, Czech Republic, I was hoping that those guys would be a little bit more competitive. The key in the second half was the great 3-point shooting. Well, we saw that in the scrimmage game, the exhibition game in Las Vegas, and we saw in the first game against France, you know, if that 3-point shooting is not there, what does Team USA do? And hopefully they can organize themselves so they have a little bit more, you know, togetherness, teamwork. But if you're complaining because Coach Popovich is saying, hey, make five passes before you shoot, that doesn't bode well for me in these pressure games. I think that Spain has played two gold medal games against USA, a semifinal game. You know, they're coming off the 2019 World Cup championship. This is an outstanding team, an outstanding coach. I feel like they played a lot of zone in the second half in that Las Vegas scrimmage with a purpose. And I feel like now, after this tough loss against Slovenia, they're not going to blink when it comes to this pressure game. And I think they're just a little bit more together, a little tougher unit with more experience in these situations. Team USA is going to be one-on-one. If they hit their shots, it's going to be great. But I just feel like, you know, the response to be one-on-one as compared to five-on-five, I feel like Spain is going to, you know, surprise – well, maybe not surprise people, but, you know, give us a rough time.
I pick the Aussies to win this thing. But I watched Slovenia and remembering that they won the European Championship, right? And they're awesome, right? What they're doing is like what Argentina did when they won it, right? It is mind-blowing. A country of that size, with that lack of history, is able to be this competitive. And it's not just one guy, but he's unbelievable, right? Like Spain, they ran a box and won almost the entire game, right? And he's, all right, so I'll score 12. It's fine. I don't need to score 40 or 50. I just find people. In your mind, is Slovenia the favorite? Is Australia the favorite? Spain the favorite? Who do you actually think is the best team?
For me, I think Australia has to be your favorite just because of their team makeup. Losing Aaron Baines affects it, number one.
That's a weird story.
Yes, yes. So that's strange and difficult for them. Spain, I have ahead of Slovenia, even though Slovenia won this game just because of the experience factor. What Luka Doncic is doing with Slovenia is something special, you know. We played them in Kaunas. We held them to 18-10. We worked on our game plan for a year. You know, I'm in touch with some of my NBA friends all year.
A year?
I'm telling you, Doug.
Okay,
you know,
so give me the – okay, when you're preparing for Luka, right, and FIBA Luka is different, a little bit different at least than Mavericks Luka, although there's a lot of similarities there. What are your keys?
Well, so for me, the key contacts for me, Jay Larinaga with the Celtics, Chris Fleming with the Bulls, Mike Longobardi with the Wizards. And basically, I would stay in touch with these guys. And as the schedule would pop up and the Mavs would play one of these teams, I would reach out and say, hey, what are you guys trying to do with Doncic tonight? They would send me a couple coaching points through the game plan and I would watch. And then basically, we put together a 6-point game plan that, you know, it wasn't like Jordan rules, but we were trying to get this done with Doncic. The point with Doncic is his left hand step back is so fantastic.
You make him go right?
Well, the point is if you make him go right, he's such a much better pick and roll player. In our game plan, we wanted to direct him to the left and we wanted to live with the step back shots contested and challenged. We wanted him to be more of a one-on-one player than a pick and roll player where he can include everybody, involve everybody. In the paint,
So a ball screen coverage. What do you do?
Well, the thing that people don't realize about Doncic is his IQ is so high. Once he figures out what you're trying to do to him, you know, he can do whatever he wants. He can shoot from the perimeter. He can play pick and roll and get his teammates involved. He can score in the post. He can score mid-range, finish. So what we saw against Spain, he's reading the game. They're doubling me. They're playing box and one. I need to get the ball to my teammates. I need to trust my teammates. And this is making your teammates better. It's beautiful. So he hits Mike Toby on the short roll. Toby's passing it out. And the rest of these guys, Prepelic, Blazic, Dragic, they're playing with so much confidence, you know. But again, it all starts because people are so focused on Doncic. You're so focused on him. You give him an advantage, and he's able to move the ball, get it where it needs to go. You know, the other things we tried to do with him, he's so good in the paint. We didn't want him to get in the paint and sit down. So we tried to stay between him and the basket. You know, if he gets you on his back, it's a 2-on-1 on the big and it's over. The other thing he does is he sits down in the paint. He's so big and strong. If you pull in, he can make every pass. So when he sits down in the paint, we stepped up to the three-point line. You know, all of these things that we did, we tried to attack him. You know, we tried to get him in foul trouble. We tried to pick him up 94 feet and wear him down. Doug, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. You know, like, we gave a great effort. I respect the players on our team. We gave such great effort. We had a 7-foot young guy, Oleg Balcerowski, blocked a shot one time, challenged him. We gave great effort. But at the end of the day, his IQ and his just complete skill set is something special. You can't speed him up. He's big enough to and strong enough to finish and make plays in the paint. Pick and roll, he reads the game brilliantly. And again, this is a guy you play through who makes his teammates better, who inspires them with confidence. And I think we're seeing something special right now. I felt good when he put 48 on Argentina, because I'm like, okay, he kicked their ass worse than he kicked ours. So, you know.
How long have you coached overseas?
So I've been coaching since 2001. Okay. 20 years.
Okay. 20 years. Best player you've ever coached against?
100%. Not even close. Because the skill set, you know, our American player called Rondo the night before we played him, and Rajon Rondo gave us some player tips against him. Didn't matter. Didn't matter. You know, we did our best, but this guy is a fantastic player and something special. He, arguably best player in the world. You know,
what are the feelings about him in Europe and in South America? Like, is he revered or is he disliked?
No, I think people really root for him as a European player playing in the USA. I think he's carrying that torch of a Parker, of a Nowitzki, of all the great European players that have come through. I think what people like about him is his playing style, not overly athletic, just intelligent and skilled. You know, it's funny because when he was winning the MVP with Real Madrid, you know, some of my NBA friends were like, Mike, how good do you think he is? I'm like, this is a high school kid winning an MVP in the EuroLeague. He's going to be really good. Oh, I don't know. I don't see it. I just don't know if he can create separation. He's got the athleticism.
No, listen, I have several friends that were assistant coaches, and they're like, Luca, when they first year, like, Luca, like bad body. And I was like,
okay,
doesn't matter. He uses that body, right? And okay, so that brings me to this one. Giddy was selected a lot higher than people thought. And I had Andrew Boga was on my podcast, but we talked about Giddy, I think off air via text. And he was like, I like him, but he's really young, probably needs a year or two. But that's the same story with everybody. But I was trying to explain to people in Oklahoma City, it's like, look, you're so caught up in like vertical leap and all this other shit that doesn't actually matter. Right? Whereas, and I'm not saying Giddy is Luca, please don't anybody. But in the context of what actually works in basketball is we're still not there. The overall talent and speed and athleticism and length of NBA players, considering how the game's officiated and played, is still skews in the side, and guys can still just make plays because of their athleticism. But I like the pick more than other people do. He's big, he's strong, he can read things, he can shoot some. Like, does he have to get better? Like, sure. But he's a kid, and he played very well in the Australian League, which is not great, but it's much better than it used to be. Am I crazy to like the Giddy selection more so than many people who do what I do, or a lot of fans actually like?
I don't think so. You're talking about vertical leap. I think what you have to look for is feeling for the game. Yeah. Does a player have feeling for the game? Because you can't teach it. You can't
teach feel.
Feel for the game. And this is the separator. You know, you can have a guy who's a super athlete, but just, you know, the IQ or the feel is not there. So if people see Giddy playing well and winning the MVP of the under 17 Oceania tournament and having all these accolades coming out. Obviously, I think Sam Presti and his staff do a fantastic job of identifying talent and finding players. You know, look, they also have, you know, the Lithuanian guy, Jakubaitis. So they're doing a great job scouting internet.
Well, he's like a 7-foot point center.
I mean, these guys, they do an outstanding job. And again, I think what you look for with Giddy is the feeling for the game. And you're going to take a chance on a young kid that has to prove himself, you know. But again, these international kids are playing against high level competition. They're showing flashes. They've got potential, the IQ, the feel, and then you plug them in and you hope they can really make those steps. I mean, Giddey, to me, he's in a great situation. Look who he's around. Look at the great players he's around. He's around Ingles. He's around Mills. He's around Tybalt. He's around
Baines. And I don't know if you feel this way. Like, I think Ben Simmons not playing is a major, major mistake. It only proves to me, it just proves like I would stay away. I would stay away. And here's my thinking. And I understand that, like, look, dude, the NBA season is really hard. It's arduous. And there's a lot of pressure. He didn't play well at the end, a lot of negativity. And he's going to go, they're going to find him a new home. Okay. But the Australians, and if you have kids and you're listening to this, I've already previously cursed, like, listen, they don't give a fuck. Okay. They're going to tell Ben Simmons in not so polite terms, in like the way in which they handle each other and look at life, they're just very matter of fact. Right. And that's what he needs. He doesn't need sycophants around him. He doesn't need his agent and his brother working him out. He needs guys that are like, hey, fucker, shoot the ball, you know, pass the ball, move the ball. You know, you should shoot right handed, like whatever they believe, that's what he should do. And it's tough love, right? They're tough love guys and they're the best. And I'm guessing that Baines did what they all do, which is like after the game, he went out and got some pissed and, you know, which is beer, right? And fucking hit his head, right? Like an idiot. But he's an Aussie. Like, that's who they are. They're the best. Yeah, as long as you understand what you're walking into, that they don't give a shit if you're an NBA all-star, if you're dating starlets, if you have 100 million, they don't care. They treat everybody the exact same and they have no reverence towards anybody. And they like to play really hard and really physical. And it's awesome. And I agree with you. Like Ingles and Patty Mills and all those, they're Baines. Like, they're the best, right? The absolute best. But they're going to give you a tough love. And I think he, his camp, whoever made that decision screwed up, because this could have been an incredible summer for him. Think about it right now. If he was sitting in Japan, how much, just even him didn't hardly play, how great that would be for him to absorb it. And I think he either got bad advice or he himself knew that they were going to get that tough love and he didn't want to be around it.
First of all, your Australian impression was fantastic. That was unbelievable right there. That was high level. But no, I agree. You know, Ben Simmons is a super talent, but he's got to figure some things out. You know, again, a superstar that doesn't want to shoot the ball. You know, I love Doc Rivers. I'm a big Doc Rivers fan. I was hoping that things would end differently this season there. But again, if you want to talk about the national teams, the brotherhood, being honest with each other, helping each other, I think those are all really good points you make. And I mean, the positivity of competing in the Olympics and maybe getting a gold medal and having all this great experience, that would be a great way to get over some of the negatives of the way the season ended for Simmons. It really would. I agree 100%.
Okay. So here's, we have two choices. I'll give you the choice. Okay. We can wrap this thing and then let's see what happens and break it down and then talk about the next opponents, or we can go through all the other teams. You make the call.
I love to talk about all the teams. I'm a guy here.
So we've hit Slovenia. We've hit Spain. We've hit Team USA. We've hit the Aussies a little bit, right? Argentina just doesn't have the pop anymore, right? I mean, that just, it feels that way.
You know, Doug, I love Argentina. I respect, you know, their team. You know, Scola's unbelievable. 19 points a game at 42 years. He's shooting 44% from three, playing great. The three guards, Campazzo, you know, La Privatola, and obviously now Vildoza. I really like Gabriel Deck, the four-man. But I'm disappointed in the way they've played this summer. I can't figure it out. I have higher expectations for this team. I don't know what the issue is from watching.
In what way are they not playing up to what you thought or how you thought they would play?
I just thought they would be a lot more competitive. I thought they would be able to get over the hump against some of these teams. You know, losing in preparation to USA, okay. Losing to Nigeria. You know, they lost to Doncic in Slovenia. They lose to Spain. They're playing, but I just expected a little bit more out of these guys. This is a team that finished second in the World Cup and played fantastic basketball in China. So I don't know if it's the addition of Vildoza into the backcourt. I was hoping that would be a three guard lineup and really a strength for the team. I don't know if they're having trouble with their roles or what's going on, but I'm just a little disappointed in the way Argentina's played, but maybe it's my high expectations for the team too. I don't know.
Italy got any shot?
So the interesting thing about Italy is the young guys playing. They're really playing well. Polinara, you know, Mannion, Fontecchio, I don't know. I think I'm mispronouncing his name, shooting the ball really well. You know, those guys have really stole the spotlight. Melli has struggled. He's been inconsistent. You know, Gallinari, we haven't seen too much production from him. So some of the traditional big names, it's kind of a changing of the guard with Italy. But again, what we see, five of these top eight teams, you know, in the quarterfinals are from Europe. And all of these European teams, when they get hot and they're really playing well, they can make a run. I just don't see Italy getting past France. I think France is really ready right now. I see them beating Italy. And then that sets up a great, you know, semifinal, Slovenia and France.
Well, help me out with France, because it did, you know, obviously now they've arrived, right? And maybe this, or in fairness, in order to really arrive, you got to get a medal in the Olympics, which I don't believe they've done previously. But I mean, they had Tony Parker, they had Boris Diaw, they had the Petruses, and they didn't win shit.
Well, they did win. They won Eurobasket, I think, in
when was that though?
2013, I believe. I may be wrong. 2015, they hosted it, but I think Spain won. I think 2013, they won with Tony Parker. So that's the one like big victory, big win.
Why haven't they done better in the Olympics?
You know, there for a long time, there was lots of questions about that. I think Vincent Collet has done a really good job with the national team for years. He's done an excellent job. The pieces now, I think, are in place. Obviously, for me, when I look at France, the guard play, Nando De Colo, outstanding point guard. Thomas Hertel, also really high-level point guard. You know, you got Batum, who does a lot of good things on the wing. Fournier, when Fournier is playing the way he's played in the tournament, you know, leading the team and scoring, hunting shots like he does, he's really good. But now you look in the front court, and I think this was the advantage. Gobert, Poirier together. And then Yabusele, again, he's kind of come into his own, maybe filling the shoes of in his big shoes to fill with Diaw. But their front court, their back court, it's a really balanced team. It's a really experienced team. And I think that, again, to me, the guard play is the key. I think that's what separates them right now. De Colo, Hertel, these guys, maybe a little bit underrated because people see how much, you know, Fournier is scoring.
I think we hit them. We didn't hit Germany.
I love Germany. Again, you know, I've coached there for 10 years. Henrik Rödl, very good friend. Very, very happy for him. I think there was not a lot of expectations on these guys coming in because the NBA stars, let's say Dennis Schroeder, Daniel Theis, Maxi Kleber, not with the team. And what Germany has done this summer is a great testament to team basketball. Again, some next generation guys there. Mo Wagner has played well. You know, I think that Maodo Lo, who's an experienced overseas point guard, has done well. Andy Obst, a 3-point shooter from Rasha Farm Ulm, has played well. So, but it's really a team effort. And again, I think if we see the way game plans from different teams have been tried to put in place, they have a good blueprint with Doncic, but it comes down to personnel. And I just think that Slovenia is going to be too much for them in this quarterfinal game.
Okay. So you have again, Slovenia, France,
yep.
Spain,
yep.
And the Aussies.
Yep.
Okay. And rooting for the U.S.
Which I am. I want them to win, but I just think it's going to be – if they win, it's because it's fantastic one-on-one individual play.
Do you just – that is the question. Do you just go like, hey, let's not try and reinvent ourselves. Let's just go get buckets, fellas, and defend us. Because that feels like that's what Coach K did. Like I can't make them make the extra pass that they're supposed to make. I can't make them make the extra movement that they're supposed to have. So just go get buckets.
I think you said it earlier when they were so athletic and pressuring defensively and could get out in transition.
But they don't have that.
They should focus their energy.
But they don't have that with us. Like Damian Lillard is not that guy defensively.
Right.
Right. So if they're their best five, if if, you know, you're going to do what? Lillard, KD, Draymond, and who are your other two? You're doing, I mean, you're going to do Drew Holiday?
Jason Tatum.
Okay, but like Jason, everybody wants Jason Tatum to be Kobe Bryant. Like, yeah. Hey, there's a whole other end of the floor that Kobe Bryant was 10 times the player of Jason Tatum. Like, here's the problem. In order for them to play like the old USA teams play, LeBron was a great defensive player, yeah. You know, and actually a really good European defense player because he's so physical. He can be so physical. Yeah. You know, Kobe Bryant can be a great defensive player. Melo wasn't, but if he's your fifth best defensive player, like you're okay. And you can be very, very physical here. But you look at these guys and Lillard and Tatum, man, they're not great defensively. And that's not what they do. That's not who they are. They can't all of a sudden remake themselves in this short period of time.
And you know, what's interesting is, okay, when you watch Team USA, they're trying to play a lot of same size lineups where they do all kinds of switching. These European teams are so smart. They're going to, okay, you want to switch? We're going to find the matchup we want. And most of the time, it's on the perimeter where they attack, but France attacked in the post. France got the mismatch. And you know, again, when they play big like that, and again, Spain has the possibility to play big. Spain can play big. If they can't match up man-to-man, they'll play zone. But Team USA, the issue for me, again, you point to it. Pressure defense, get out and create offense from your defense. You know, take the pressure off of the half court O, let the guys play a little bit. If that's the USA, you know, game plan, now you're saying switch. And look at the end of the game against France. You're up 7 and you're switching, not only on the ball, but off the ball. Those end line inbound plays, and they switch and Fournier ends up wide open in the corner. Again, you've got to have the defensive discipline and toughness, especially in winning time, to guard without switching. Keep your matchups as they are. I think it's the easy way out. It's, you know, okay, we're used to switching in the NBA and then whatever. But these are money possessions. You've got to be able to defend with toughness and physicality. And to me, that's an issue. If Team USA has that mentality, play the same size lineups and switch everything, these teams are going to be ready and they're going to make them pay.
Awesome stuff. All right. You don't have to commit to it, but if you'd like to join us after these games, that would be awesome. In the meantime, you're the best. I really appreciate it. You're an unbelievable wealth of knowledge. Your passion for it just comes through. Thanks so much for joining me.
I appreciate it, Doug. Let's keep talking basketball, man. Love it.
All right, how good was that, right? Like, where else can you get that? A national team coach who's also American, coached against all these teams, giving you kind of the real deal skin. I mean, you're welcome. You're welcome, right? You are welcome. A reminder, you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show every day, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, 12:03 Pacific, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio app. You can also listen on Sirius XM 217 or 203. And of course, I what I need you to do is tell a friend, tweet it out, put it on your Facebook, whatever you want to do, share it with somebody. Okay. Download, subscribe, rate, write a review. I think I make more money doing that. In the meantime, I'm Doug Gottlieb. Thanks so much for listening. We'll get another one of these after the quarterfinals is done. This is All Ball.